Bom dia. That's my limit in Portuguese. I'm sorry. I will learn more for the next time, I promise. One more word. My name is Damien Caro. And today we're going to talk about containers, and we'll see if containers make the peace in the house. And by the house, I mean the enterprise. I'm very curious about DevOps. I'm curious about many other things. I'm very tech savvy. I love to go around the world and talk in different presentations, different conferences that are around the industry. I'm eager to not just remain within the Microsoft technologies, even though they're great. The ecosystem that we see today is much more interesting. And DevOps, specifically DevOps, bring that capacity to interoperate and to go across the silos of product. I would like to give a special thank to two people who helped me build the demo today that I'm going to walk through. Alexander Georgievich, who is in my team, and he actually helped building some pieces on the demo. And Sergian Bozovic, I hope I'm saying his name correctly, who helped building some development elements from the application we're going to cover. And you can reach me at the email address that you have and the Twitter handle that is on the top. When we talk about DevOps, I'd like to ask you, who in the room consider themselves as developers? Don't be shy, you can raise your hands. Okay. Who in the room considers to be in the operations part of the company? Okay, and who considers to be both, doing both jobs at the same time? Okay, pretty good mix. It's very interesting. And when I go, again, around the world, I like to understand what is the layout and how many people put themselves in. I don't necessarily like to say buckets, but in which flavor of the application that we talk about. And if we look back, or if we try to look even as of today, the traditional development methodology is very similar to what we have been doing for the last 15, 20 years-ish. The software goes from the development team, and it goes to production. And it's like the kitchen thing. I'm French, so I like the cooking thing. And yeah, you're in the kitchen, you cook the dish, and when it's ready, you ship it. And you ship it to the room where there is a waiter that hopefully will deliver the plate in time, which is still hot in a nice way to the customers. That kind of looks like software development. You have the development team working their side, they cook the plate, and then they hand it off to the operations team and say, well, now it's your turn, give it to the customer, make it run, basically, in a nutshell. And in the DevOps terminology, we use the wording, the wall of confusion. I prefer to think of it as the Great Wall of China, because it's really two words that get separated by doing that approach. And the operations team have the pressure of running 24/7, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And what happens is they try to make it as efficient as they can using the code, eventually the script, eventually the configuration file from the development team. Sometimes the development team will provide those scripts, those configuration files. Sometimes they don't. They just say, well, this is how it works, and it works on my environment. Make it go on your servers. And even though that happens, most of those tasks gets manual. And it creates a divergence between the production environment and QA, quality assurance. I have a question for you. I like to ask questions. And there is nothing to win besides my consideration. Who in this room can guarantee that in the next 10 minutes or 10 hours, whatever, they can have an identical, and I insist, identical environment for QA that is from what is in production? Anyone? Like identical. Like you know you're going to have exactly the same behavior. No one. The divergence comes from manual operations. It comes from update. It comes from things we're doing. And I've been in production for years, and we do it. As much as we try to avoid that, we just do it. It just happens. I'm just going to give you a little story here. I worked with companies in Europe, and I had that company that was, I'm not going to say which company, it's a big company, and they were based in Italy. And I was like, okay, how do you do your operation, your deployment? And they were like super proud. Oh, we have our automation script. I'm like, okay, let me see it. They printed me 50 pages of document. That was the automation script. I'm like, okay, so how long did it take? Well, it takes about a week if we're very focused, and obviously operations team are never 100% focused on something, they always have something. So the Graal, the ideal environment, is build once, run everywhere, and make sure that what we run is identical everywhere. In that case, we start to address what I call the software delivery challenges. And those software delivery challenges are the three I can think of. Frustration. Dev and ops get frustrated. They get in a fight, or they start to blame each other, which is never good. It creates delay. The software, the application that is supposed to be released on September 1st get delayed by December 1st. And obviously, if you're in a retail company, it's not good. You want to be ready for the Christmas season. And it gives lacks of insight, because delays makes the whole team cut things in the project. And you know what is cut first? Monitoring. Second thing that is cut is backup. Right? And the third thing is, well, maybe we'll cut some features. So it gives a lack of insight on how the application runs, what is happening there, how does it work. And DevOps here can help solving problems. There is a company in the US. They're based in Oregon, in Portland. It's called Puppet. Anyone knows Puppet, Puppet Labs? Couple of hands? Oh, a few, bit more, okay. Puppet Labs run a report every year. They make a very good job here on getting the studies around and understanding what the companies, what the IT is doing in the world. And Puppet Labs, in the last report, started to analyze what were the benefits of DevOps. And one of them is to deploy code about 30% faster. 30 times, not 30%. 30 times faster. That's what they've made from the analysis from last year, from 2015. They had about 5,000 people responding from various companies around the world. It's not just in the US, it's really across the world. The other point that they have discovered by having some DevOps elements in the operations, in the development processes, is that the application being built have 60 times less failures. So if the code has, and I'm talking about the code meaning the whole code of the application, I will detail what I mean here. But that code means there will be less problems if this is one single piece of code where the two teams work together in building and deploying at the same time. I want to highlight one point here. There are development teams who today are doing agile methodology. About 3/4 of the development team in the world do agile today. So you would tell me, well, I'm already doing some pieces. I'm already agile. I've improved my development processes. True. But what if the development team is doing agile, but the operations team is not doing agile? The operations team becomes or appears are a latency in the system. They appear as creating inertia. And it doesn't help at all. It doesn't help the whole process. It doesn't help the IT performance. And that's what the report from last year discovered, is that the DevOps practices, if implemented across the IT team, help improving the overall IT performance from the enterprise. And finally, what we've learned, or what the report tells us, is that it brings a strong IT competitive advantage. Everyone has heard about the fact that every company nowadays is an IT, is a software company. That becomes very known. I don't know in which industry you work, but I can tell you that there is at least in your industry one company that is building software. The one I can think of, which is very, very known, is the car industry. The car industry is becoming more and more a software company. I'm not referring necessarily to the latest scandal, but you've read the news? Okay, yeah, that was true. But every company now in the car industry is becoming a software industry. It's a software company. The one I can think of is Tesla. Tesla has a car, yes, they do the hardware, but at the same time, they have as many developers as an ISV, as a software development company. Their development team is huge, and they release update frequently. Every month, every 2 months, they have a software update for the car. The software that drives the car, not just the radio, the real thing that drives the car, monitors the battery, and all of that. They're a software company. And if you have an efficient software deployment mechanism, software IT deployment here, the company gets the competitive advantage, and that's what Tesla is about. I mean, if you think of them in the electric car industry, they're way ahead. I don't work for them. Just disclaimer. But to get there, to get to the stage where you can have a DevOps approach, you need a three-stage conversation. That means you need a product. You obviously need the right products, the right tool. I have a pen. This is a tool. Does that make me a writer? No. I need to know how to write. And that's the people piece. The people need to understand how to do those things. The teams need to upskill their knowledge. They need to reinvent themselves. The people will need to restart from scratch on how you build things. The developer will need to rethink how they build code. Maybe the code will have connection with the infrastructure. Maybe the code, the C#, I don't know what you're writing, which code you're using, but let's say C#, Java, whatever. Maybe that code will actually talk to the cloud APIs and say, OK, I need more resources. Let's call Azure and kick off a new VM. And the IT guy, the operations team, will need to have a good understanding on what is happening in the development, what is happening in the code. Because that will give the right knowledge on how to operate that application. And finally, the last piece of the equation is the processes. If the process of the team remains the same as it is before, it's not DevOps. You can work together, but if your targets, your objectives remain opposite, that's not going to help. The team have to reinvent how they're organized. Again, I had a few discussions with companies in Europe a few months ago, and we were thinking on how to implement DevOps practices in their company. It was medium-sized ISV, 400 people, development team, 400 people about. And the question is, do I create teams that are focused on product? And the whole team will integrate the development and the operations. Do I create teams that are focused on a specific workload, specific competency? So I will have a database team, I will have a automation team, et cetera, et cetera. Or will I make different approach and each component in my application is going to be one team that cares for the component from beginning to end? The discussion is still going, but it is a reflection that has to happen. And I don't have the answer. There is no magic answer here. The answer will come from what and how your organization wants to be. What I know, though, is DevOps has multiple practices. And when we talk DevOps, we talk about DevOps practitioners. The DevOps practitioners will talk about all those different practices. And the first one that you usually hear about is infrastructure as code. Infrastructure as code can have multiple meanings. One of them is, okay, I will describe in a file how my infrastructure will look like. That's one approach. Well, I want to run that web server. What do I need? I need a front end that runs Nginx. I need a database that runs MySQL. Maybe I need a middle tier application that will run Ubuntu and some components on it. And maybe I need an additional backup server. OK, now we have that architecture. I want my database to be clustered, so I want to replicate that to a different location. Fine, so we know the architecture. We've all done that on the board. Now the thing is, infrastructure as code will bring you to writing in a text file how that looks like. And I will show you how that looks like. So you basically say, OK, I want that server with this operating system, with that configuration, and so on and so on. That's one approach. It's infrastructure as code. Another approach, and we may at one point get there, is in your application code, you describe what you want. And you will interact from the application, from the running code, with the infrastructure. That's kind of a further down the road approach. So infrastructure as code, one important thing, and it's usually where the discussion around DevOps starts. Continuous integration. Anyone has heard about continuous integration? How many of you do it? Oh, a few hands, OK. So CI is another core component. CI is about having continuously the code checked in and built as you evolve the code. You may think it works for small project, right? It works for any project. There is one I want to highlight. We've released recently Windows 2016 technical preview. That's the marketing name. Behind the scene, we have Windows containers. The Windows container thing is nothing else than a port. So we've ported the Docker engine from Linux to Windows. Very good. We work with Docker. We collaborated with them. I have a very good friend over there. They are very happy with us. And what happened is when they started to have the port of Windows on Docker on Windows, they wanted to ensure the compatibility. They wanted to ensure that what we were doing on Windows was not breaking their current and existing development processes. So the priority they have done when they started to work together was to do and implement continuous integration. So the port of Docker on Windows has gone through an open source project with continuous integration. Another scenario where it works actually is Visual Studio Online. The whole Visual Studio Online has moved to that methodology, to that approach on how they build and develop software. Automated testing, that kind of speaks for itself. When you deploy, when you build, you want to make sure that it is doing what it has, what it's supposed to be doing. It's one of the best practices. Continuous deployment, well, it goes with continuous integration most of the time. It means that you technically take your code, deploy as you go. Facebook is very famous for that. They just continuously deploy new features. Amazon is also doing that. Amazon is like implementing thousands of new features on their website every day. Continuous deployment. They deploy. They don't wait. They just deploy, deploy, deploy. But you want to also have some practices, some methodology around how you release. So it's good to deploy, but you also want to make sure you release with the right approach. And release management is one of the key practices. I'm not going to walk through all of them because we could spend hours discussing each of them. There is one practice that I like very much. It's really looking ahead. It's hypothesis-driven development. Hypothesis-driven development means testing in production. How many of you do testing in production? Featured, sort of. A/B testing as well. Any of you has been on Facebook and you had a different messenger than your friend? That ever happened to you? That's A/B testing. What Facebook is doing, they select a certain number of people across the world based on different criteria, which I don't know, and they will deploy to those people a new version of Messenger. They see how it works. They deploy to 5% maybe at the beginning, or even less. And depending on how it goes, they will go at a broader scale, or they'll roll back without impacting the whole environment on Facebook. Amazon is doing similar things on their website. They want to see if the new store is working on things like that. So they do those activities. But there is something even better. There is something I like very much in the hypothesis-driven development. It's called fault injection. You inject fault voluntarily in your app. Sounds crazy, right? You know any company who is doing it? Anyone has heard of Chaos Monkey? Netflix. That's what they're doing. They randomly go and kill some VMs, randomly go and kill some services to see how their application keeps running. And the thing is, it works. And the good thing is, the day of the cloud is going to have problems. They're going to be resilient because they have tested so many scenarios before. And you know what? I have a secret for you. In software development, bugs will happen. In the cloud, the only thing you know for guarantees, there will be glitches. I don't know which one. There will be glitches. I can share that secret with you, with no risk. DevOps practices in the demo, we're going to focus on three of them: infrastructure as code, continuous integration, and continuous deployment. Those are the three practices I'm going to highlight today with the demo. So let's switch a bit to containers. Let's get into the container thing. Transportation in 1927 was like that. You had on the docks a bunch of barracks and barrels and bags of everything. It basically was a huge mess of different goods. And what happened is they were loading everything from the dock to the boat. And they were trying to put that thing together on the boat, and hopefully it would stay, as it was from the very beginning. When you had rough sea, that was a problem. It was very cumbersome, very complex. It took ages to load a boat. Now, you don't use those things anymore. When you load a boat, you load containers. That's the largest container ship in the world as of 2014, I think. Very much likely the same. It takes hours to load a boat. It's just taking the containers, putting them on the dock, and in a few hours, the boat is ready to go. It has accelerated the whole goods transportation in the world. Well, we think of containers in the same way. Containers, software containers, is for code what the physical containers on the real boats are for goods. But containers, and I want to make sure we understand the same thing, containers are not virtual machines. Containers use the kernel of the operating system on which they run, which means you will run Linux containers on Linux. You will run Windows containers on Windows. You will not run Windows containers on Linux. You will not run Linux containers on Windows. They have different kernels. The primitives have evolved on Windows to make sure we support containers, but it's different code. So they're not like machines or virtual machines where you can carry them around. The isolation is still there. It's an isolation process level. They share the kernel. Their processes are isolated. And the containers will share the libraries, the binaries that are on the system. And they're made of differential layers. So when you build a container, you will build your new container based on the layers of other containers. So you can start from zero and build a whole container from scratch. Or you can use existing containers and build your application on top of the container. How you build a container? Well, you have a file that describes the container, and that file, again, could be considered as infrastructure as code, which describes how you build the container's layers from beginning to end. The good thing is, containers, because they are isolation of layers, of processes, they bring everything with them. It makes us touch the idea of build once, run everywhere. What does that make as a change from how we operate the application? Has anyone seen Star Trek, the original series? Okay, a few hands. Anyone remember, well, Captain Kirk? Yeah, very famous, everyone knows. We remember Spock and the blue shirt. Anyone remember the red shirt? The red shirts. Yeah, there are a few of them, but most of them were disposables. Most of them were actually the crowd that was killed during the episodes. They were disposable characters. Operating systems, virtual machines, must be treated in this modern world like red shirt. You have a problem, you kill and redeploy. You know how to do it. You have all the elements. You get the infrastructure as a code, which automates the deployment. You get the code in the container, which you know how to deploy. It just runs. Why would you care if you have a problem? If you need to move to a different data center? If you need to different host? If you need to do maintenance? Kill and redeploy. Like cattle. Boom, next. Next container, boom, next container, and so on and so on. the IT is changing on how we think about things. It really means build once and run everywhere. So we have the code, application code, and infrastructure code, which makes what we call a deployable unit. So that unit can then be deployed in many environments. It can be redeployed in production, but also, coming back to my first statement, it can be deployed in QA, in dev, in test. You want to try something? We redeploy, we test, and we delete. It remakes the change. So, let's dig into the demo. My colleagues have helped building an app, very simple app. It's a geek quiz. You will see the geek quiz, and we'll go through it. The geek quiz is made of, I would say, two components, a front end, a web application that runs with Nginx, and it uses MVC4 on Mono. We wanted to be traditional in terms of development. We didn't want to try ASP.NET 5 and so on. We could, but we wanted to be very traditional. So we use Debian as the operating system, and then we use the MVC4 application running on Mono and Nginx. The database is MySQL, same thing running on Debian. We've been very, very traditional here. It runs in our deployment, in our scenario, in one Azure virtual machine. So those two components are two containers. The two containers will run on the same virtual machine for simplicity. The deployment platform is using Azure Resource Manager to define what we want. What do we want? We want one virtual machine. We want one public IP address. We want one virtual network. And we want interfaces. And we describe which container we want. And now, the thing is how we integrate all those pieces, how we have a continuous flow of code to application deployed. And for that, we use, I said two, but actually three services. We use Visual Studio Online for the application build, for the continuous integration piece of the application part. We use Docker Hub for the container, and we use GitHub for the source repo of our container architecture. How is this working? Our code, the code repository is into Visual Studio Online. We have a continuous synchronization with VSO. When VSO has the code, we do a check-in and we do a build. It goes to VSO hosted build to build the code. Then at the end of the build, we trigger a connection to Docker Hub. And Docker Hub connects with GitHub to get the code and compile the Docker machine, the Docker container. Once we have that, hold on, there is one more piece in the equation. When we have that, we actually kick off the deployment in Azure, and we get everything running in 15 minutes or so. Let's switch to the demo. Let's hope the demo gods are with us today. Oh, just in time for the demo. So, here's my quiz. So my code is, let's make sure you can see in the back. Can you see in the back? So my code is running on Visual Studio. It is connected with Visual Studio Online. And I have the title here to make sure that we go on whatever application we want to use. So it's kind of my identification piece. Let's look for the demo. Where is it? Here it is. So DevOps by the example. It's the same title. We can log in. I'm just walking you through the application itself. And it's a Git quiz, so which is not actually a things.js. Mustache.js, hammer.js, horseradish.js, uglify.js. Anyone? Horseradish? Let's see. Correct. Okay, so it's kind of an easy app. Nothing very fancy, just fun. Now, let's say we want to try a new environment. Let's say we want to try a QA environment and we want to make sure we do different things in our code. So I'm going to do something very, very complex in code. I'm going to do DevOps at, no, not TechEd, MS Insights. I'm going to be killed by marketing. MS Insights, that's the right name. Oh, yeah, typo, Insights. Okay, we should be good. Marketing is going to be happy. Let's see if that works. I'm saving. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to commit the change here. Demo. You know when that thing has been on forever? Live. Okay, I'm going to do my commit. Oops. Sorry for that. Commit. Now I need to synchronize everything. I'm losing the mouse when I zoom. So it is synchronizing the changes of the current branch to Visual Studio Online. Now we're going to switch to VSO and see what's happening behind the hood. So it's fully synchronized. So if I go to VSO, so in VSO, I have created a build definition. So my build definition integrates three steps. The first one is definitely a VSO build or Visual Studio build. So we use Visual Studio agents on virtual machine to build my code. It's automatically run and I don't have to care about it. You can create your own agents, but in that case, I'm just using the solution. Then, what I'm doing is I'm doing two PowerShell scripts. Once we have completed the build, I'm going to run the first script, which, as you can see by the name, is making a copy of the artifact to Azure Blob Storage. So I'm taking the zip file, which has all my code compiled, built, and make it to Azure. Once that has been copied, I use another PowerShell script, which kick off the build on the Docker file. How do I make that connected with my code and the checking of my code? Well, in VSO, Docker Quiz QA is my build definition. I can integrate VSO for continuous integration. It's a click, it's that simple. And I say, I want to have an integration with whatever is checked in on my master branch. If you have multiple branches, you can select the branches you want. In my case, I'm just going for one branch. So every time I do a change, I'm going to do that thing. You can have a scheduled approach. You can be more specific on how you want to do it. But that's how it works. By the way, my code is here. And in my code, in my source repository, I have the two PowerShell script files. Those two PowerShell script files are the one I'm using in my PowerShell stepped in the build definition. Let's have a look at how things are going. Oh, the build has already completed. So my build has completed less than a minute ago. When we kick off a new build, you can look at the logs, you can get to the console, you can see what's happening in real life. So just wanted to show you the script file, PowerShell script. So the PowerShell script takes four parameters as an entry point. It gets the thread account, the destination path, the drop file, the directory where you put the files, the name of the package, and the connected services, which is in which Azure subscription you want to run. That is going to be important in the future. Okay. I'm going to keep that here. I'm going to switch now to my Docker Hub account. So on Docker, we have created a repository. And that repository is integrated with GitHub. So just for those who are not familiar with it, when you go to your account in Docker Hub, you can create repositories, which is where you put your containers. But you can also create automated builds. The automated builds will actually be connected with GitHub, and it will get the code from GitHub to create the container. So in my case, the Docker Quiz 1 is connected with GitHub. I'm sorry. Build settings. And it is. When my source code repo is pushed and updated, then it will trigger automatically a build of the container. And again, I'm using the master branch on GitHub. I could use a different branch, but in that case, I'm using the master branch. Can I use a tag? Can you use a tag? Not that I'm aware of. Oh, yeah, you do. GitHub, that's my code. I have three files that are important here. The Docker file, which describes my container. I will show you how it looks. My docker deploy.json file, and the run init bootstrap. The run init bootstrap is what is run at the boot of the container. My Debian container will run that to make sure and configure the environment. The JSON file describes the architecture on Azure. And the Docker file describes how the container looks like. Let's dig deeper in each of those files. Mm. I should hide them. Or here it is. So my Docker file is like this. So what my Docker file is doing, it takes the content. Oops, sorry. So it starts from the container that has been built by someone else. It's Scythe. And I use Docker Mono with all those components already installed, so we do not have to do that. Then, when we have the container, I'm making sure that the environment is up to date. So I do an apt-get update and install unzip. I will need unzip. Because what happens is I'm going to get my files. You remember that we drop the zip file with the code on the blob storage on Azure. So I'm going to get that zip file from Azure Blob Storage. And then I'm just unzipping the whole thing. I'm unzipping it and putting it in the right directory. So it's basically a bunch of shell script lines that you run. You need to concatenate them because you don't want to stack multiple layers on the container. So you stack all the script into one of them. And then I'm adding my run-init file. And we finish by the run-init to start the container. So that's how my container looks like. It's basically I run whatever is existing with Mono, MSE4, and on Debian, get my code, extract my code, make the initial file configuration, and run the whole thing. The run init bootstrap file basically configures the database. It's a MySQL database, so we want to make sure we have the right configuration, the right connection strings, and everything in the database. So we pass all of that here with the web config and the different database and the passwords and everything. Now, when that has been done, Docker Hub, let's verify that the build has done. Oops, build details. So my container has just been built. My build has been done 4 minutes ago. So I have a new container, hopefully, on Docker Hub. When that is done, I use a webhook. So what Docker Hub allows you to do is to go to a webhook and trigger something else. So what are we doing to trigger here? We're going to trigger Azure Automation. And Azure Automation is going to create the whole infrastructure in the background. So that goes to azureautomation.net. So let me walk to the Azure Automation script and see how that works. So in Azure, you have the ability to create Azure account, Azure Automation account. And in my case, I have my demo automation account, which has one runbook. And the runbook is Docker Quiz QA. Let me show you the code. So the code that we run here is PowerShell code. And the PowerShell code that I'm using is taking a template file from my GitHub repository. It gets a JSON from the GitHub repository that describes the infrastructure that I want. Let's have a look at this file. And for that, I'm going to use Visual Studio. So the code here looks like is a JSON file. So it's a JSON code that describes what I want. So what do I want? I want a new storage account. I want to define where it's going to happen. It's going to be on the West US, East US, Europe, and so on. I'm going to define the password for my SQL, the username for my administrator, the admin for the password of the virtual machine, the name for the public IP address, and so on and so on. Then you have a bunch of variables which you do not want to replicate or put into the code itself. And then you define what you want. So let me find something that is very interesting. Here it is. So I want a virtual machine, I get the name, and here you have a depends. So it will depend, it will wait for the storage account to be provisioned on Azure, and will wait for the network interface to be provisioned on Azure as well. So you can create those dependencies between the different blocks in your infrastructure. So you can go and be creative, you can create as many virtual machines as you want, you can create as many storage accounts as you want, and so on. Then you define the properties. Some of those properties are mandatory, some other properties are just optional, and it depends on each object. So we basically do a REST API call to Azure Management, and we get those parameters passed. The last thing I wanted to show you is the extension. So I'm adding to the virtual machine an extension, and the extension is the Docker extension. And I say, OK, I want Docker to be installed on that machine, and I want the image to be my Docker quiz image, the one that I just published. So when we boot the machine, Azure is going to download the container from Docker Hub based on the properties I have here. How is this working? It's very simple. Does that sound familiar to you? It looks very much like a Docker Compose file. It's just a serialized in a JSON format of the Docker Compose file. So you get your Docker Compose, rewrite it into JSON, put it there, and just go. Where? In which file? So the password of the MySQL is configured into the init of the container. That's where you want to put it. You don't want to put it into the code or anything. You want to be...
So I can have container to dev and
test? That's correct. You can have multiple containers, one for dev, one for test, one for QA, one for other purposes. I cannot resist to highlight one thing, which is very useful when you start. And I was in that case. When I started to work on JSON, I was like, oh my god, this is scary. But what happened? Visual Studio brings to you some form of UI to create those JSON files, which is very helpful. You see, I have all my parameters here. I have all my resources. And I can add resources. So I could add, it connects to Azure to verify the type of object, bring the data. So I could add, I don't know, an Ubuntu virtual machine, and it requires a couple of parameters. There is a set of templates called Azure Quick Start Templates that are available on GitHub, GitHub/Microsoft. You have Azure Quick Start Template. We have something like 200 templates available today, going from very simple Windows machine running on Azure to some very complex swarm clusters with Mesos deployed automatically. It goes from a very range of objects. You can also contribute. If you have something you want to do, you can always contribute to the thing. It's on GitHub. You can create a pull request, submit your code, and we will evaluate it. So now the runbook runs. And it deploys everything in a resource group. So my resource group is a way of logically grouping the things together. And I have in one single location my Docker VM, the public IP, the storage account. And actually, if you look, it's the name based on the Docker QA, the new environment that I've provisioned. I can go to my public IP. And let's see. Let's see if that works. Fingers crossed. So it's connecting to Azure. Azure makes the connection with the VM. Hopefully the containers are running. It seems to be all good. I don't see why, but and it's the speed of the network, of course. Yeah, we're there. The code has been completely automated from code to production. How cool is that? Cool. If you want to hold back. So you can run the previous Docker file. Yeah. That's always the option. If you want to roll back, you can roll back the previous Docker file. In a DevOps methodology, we use more a roll forward. So you redeploy an updated version of the container, which is the old code. But you do not redeploy the old version. You just re-update to the previous code. You have just the versions control. So you rebuild everything using the previous code. All right. I have one last thing to say before we go for lunch. Just final thoughts. Containers bring agility, of course. We've seen it. It's super agile, very efficient. You can move things around. But as every technology like that, it brings complexity. The challenge in the coming years or in the coming period is not going to be about containers or not. It's going to be more on how you orchestrate those containers. The discussion is going to be more around what are the technology you use to orchestrate and manipulate a large number of containers. In that regards, there are projects currently running. Mesos, one of them. Swarm is another one. Kronos is another one. All those projects will help managing those containers, but it's going to be complex. Docker containers is just one of the tools that DevOps can leverage. It's going to be a set of options, and you've seen that. We used 5 different tools to do it. And I could use Chef, I could have used Puppet, we could have used many, many, many tools. There is not one way of doing DevOps. It's multiple ways. And that brings the challenge around tools and technologies. You have to learn, and we all will have to learn new tools and technologies continuously. It's not going to be, oh, I learned something and I can stay on that for a year or two. The things will always evolve. We will constantly be learning new things. And we will need those new skills. We will need to understand things that are different. We will need to practice the way the operation or development differently. We should not be afraid to restart from the beginning. When I started to do DevOps, and to explore that world, I basically had to forget everything I knew and restart from scratch. I had to reboot. And that's going to happen to all of us. We will have to reboot at one point to get into that motion, to be more DevOps practitioner. From the people and process side, the people will have to be willing to take risks. It's going to be painful. There will be failure, and we need to accept the failure. It's not going to be an easy path. It's going to be a bumpy road. There will be rocks. There will be holes. But the end of the road is nice. It's like when you climb a mountain. The road is tough, but the view on the top is beautiful. It's very similar. It's a cultural shift that has to be injected in every organization. And that's something that we all have to carry around to our bosses, to our leadership teams, to our colleagues, to everyone. But I'm very confident that we will all come again in a year from now, and we will be more DevOps practitioners, and we'll have the same language. Thank you very much.